Okay, the lady on the radio a little earlier is absolutely wrong. Farmers need the fox hunters. What about lambs and hens, etc.? I think really you could maybe control or cull the fox population without... It doesn't seem effective chasing one fox around for a couple of hours in terms of controlling the fox population if they're a threat to lambs and hens, if that makes sense. All right. Mick Ledden is a psychotherapist and chair of PsyCare Ireland. Good morning to you. How are you keeping, Mick?
Very good, Greg. Great to be on the show this morning.
All right. Tell us about the company stroke organisation.
Yeah, brilliant. So basically, PsyCare Ireland is a charity, and every year in Ireland, upwards of 2 million people attend music festivals and concerts. And although they're really fun for most, they can also be stressful, overwhelming, places where people have fights, the crowd is too busy and overwhelming. They're also synonymous with high levels of recreational drug and alcohol use. So one HSC survey found 94.2% of respondents said they had used drugs at festivals, others mixing alcohol and polydrug use. So we basically see at a lot of these events a high level of mental health distress caused by substances and just by the environment in general. And I suppose up until a few years ago, there was no services in Ireland, unlike the UK, where there would be welfare, there would be psychological support at these big music festivals like the Picnic or Sea Sessions that's now, I think, is now on hiatus. And really, PsyCare is here to change that. We bring volunteers to festivals, we train them, and we support young people and people of all ages' mental health in the field.
I think, you know, when I was first talking about this, and I think there was a pilot at a festival a few years back, I can't remember exactly where it was, you know, there were some people concerned that this in some way was endorsing substance abuse or what have you. But really, it's about... I mean, you can't push this tide back. An awful lot of people, the majority of people, attend these events and will partake in one drug or other, right? So we have to try and get into where this is happening and best protect people, whether we like it happening in the first instance or not.
Exactly. And I think, you know, kind of like illicit drug use is only a part of the picture. Alcohol use is an enormous piece of the picture where people are having mental health difficulties or having challenges due to alcohol. They're also having them due to staying up over 2 or 3 days. And, you know, things like spiking, assaults, intimidation, all these things happen at festivals. So PsyCare is really, without judgment, saying, well, whatever the reason, if someone's upset at the festival, if they're having a bit of a crisis, that we're there to support them. And yeah, you know, we've stopped people from walking off site in confused states, or people having panic attacks, people in heightened distress. And yeah, so far it's been 17 events to date and 624 people. And I think we're only at the beginning of stemming the tide.
Yeah, as you mentioned, one festival that you did attend locally is on hiatus. But listen, we're from Donegal. We travel all over the place to attend events. So we will be down the country at events where PsyCare is. How do you engage with people? Is it tense or do you be in amongst the crowd, maybe trying to observe people in difficulty? Or maybe it's a combination of both.
It's a kind of a bit of a combination. We do set up our own softly furnished, you know, nice and welcoming tents, because I think if you're distressed, you probably don't need bright lights in a medical tent type situation. There's a soft place people can come and sit. We also have more private tents kind of in the back if somebody's really distressed, really needs that kind of intensive support. And, you'll see our volunteers in blue high-vis vests walking around the festival site as well, just checking around the stages, just letting people know that we're there. They'll see our signs around as well. So there's all kinds of ways people can come and, you know, get a bit of support from us.
You have received a bit of funding to keep the work going as much as you can. Do you think that the, you know, government policies need to recognise that this is a space where you might see a peak in people needing assistance for mental health issues, be it, I don't know, you know, whatever it might be, people know the scenarios. So A, maybe some sort of a policy in this area so that organisations like yours or just yours are present, and of course funding in that regard.
I think absolutely. And I think we only have to look across the water at the UK, where, or even just across the border into the north, where there's the purple guide for events. And that clearly stipulates that welfare is a mainstream part of events, at music events, big concerts. But so far in Ireland, you know, there's been no legislation or no kind of policy towards that. So in essence, a lot of this has been kind of swept under the rug. So I think we do need to see maybe a change at the local county council level when they're looking at granting the licenses for these festivals, especially when alcohol is being served at the events. We just know that that's terrible for people's mental health. Mm. And yeah, if we can do more, if PsyCare can be there or other organisations that need to fill the gap, I think that makes for a healthier, happier festival culture and less trauma, less deaths, less people leaving events, you know, maybe never wanting to go out again.
Or being in a vulnerable position to be the victim of an assault. There's many different areas. But I mean, I believe organisers of these big events have a duty of care. I mean, are they inviting PsyCare onto site? Are they saying, look, we'll facilitate the spaces that you believe that are necessary? You know, we'll cover the costs of your volunteers. You know what I mean? Because, I mean, obviously, we're always looking for the government to step in, but I believe these people make a lot of money, and I believe they should have a duty of care to recognise this themselves.
Yeah, and I think there is kind of a lot of pressure on, especially small independent festivals, in terms of budget, in terms of insurance going up every year and everything. But they've probably been the most proactive in welcoming PsyCare into the space. And while they mightn't be able to do much more than cover some basic expenses, these small independent festivals have been really good. We've begun to start kind of breaking into maybe some of the more, let's say, commercial festivals with alcohol sponsorship and things like that, such as District X. That was Ireland's largest dance music one day event last year. But I do think there's a long way to go in terms of the conversation, a bit like in other ways in the country, prioritising mental health, saying that mental health services are needed, and they need to be funded. And as you'd say, I think a lot of these big festivals that make a lot of money do have a duty of care. And yeah, I suppose we hope they're listening.
All right, listen, Mick, thanks very much for your time. If you've got, if you yourself or others are heading to a festival, keep an eye out. Note where the PsyCare tent is located, if it's there. We hope it is. Okay, Mick, thanks. Mick Ledden, psychotherapist and chair of PsyCare Ireland, 086 60 25,000. I haven't been to a big festival. That's just a passing comment, not in any way trying to sort of limit the importance of that conversation. I'm not sure if it's on the list, if something I'd like to do, but anyway. A caller says, I live in an area where there are lots of foxes in the lambing season. A lot of lambs went missing. I wouldn't be a fan of fox hunting, but if we let the place be overrun with foxes, cause a lot of bother to the sheep sector. So what can be done? Well, we kill a ton of badgers in this country to protect the cattle from TB and what have you, and you know we kill tens of thousands of badgers, and it's not necessarily making inroads into the amount of TB that's in herds, if the truth be told, but certainly maybe a cull of foxes is what's required. If it were done, I mean, you can't effectively manage the fox population by chasing them on horses and with dogs. I don't think anyone could argue that, could they? A caller says, I abhor all cruelty to all creatures, all animals and all humans. I find it rich hypocritical, though, that Ruth Coppinger should be fighting to stop the cruelty of killing of foxes, yet she sees nothing wrong with the cruel killing of thousands of babies through legal abortion, and it's happening every day. It is every time we talk about Gaza or the rights of any other individuals, there are people, and probably justifiably, they'd feel, that relate this to abortion. And then you could have the debate of whether it's babies or uterus or matter or whatever. But of course, that was passed in a referendum. No one's had a say on fox hunting, or no one's had a say on what is happening in Gaza, for an example. Another texter says, chased to exhaustion and ripped apart by a pack of dogs. The abuse of foxes in fox hunting is obscene and should not be allowed in modern Ireland. I hope Ruth Coppinger's bill is successful and we can finally see an end to this animal cruelty. That came in from Philip. Hi, Greg. The reason people can't rent out their properties is because it has become very common that tenants stop paying the rent. And as you said, it's difficult to get them out. And when they have to go, they are likely to wreck your house. If the government want to bully people into letting their homes, they should be responsible for the unpaid rent and to restore the property to its original condition, like an agent. This would sort out the problem. Do you think they would risk it? Well, like, if you use Airbnb, if Airbnb have an insurance policy, do they not, to cover damage to the property and what have you, maybe there could be a state insurance system to cover losses in property. I don't know. Hi, Greg. I'd be really grateful if you could say a massive thank you on behalf of all the cyclists and support crews who did Mizzen to Malin last week to raise money for Irish guide dogs. Coming through Donegal on Thursday and particularly in Inishowen on Friday, the support cheering us on was amazing. Staff and children from St. Mirren's Tubin and Scoliseagon and Buncrana gave us the best welcome. People who have been involved in the cycle for years hadn't seen anything like it. Coming from Buncrana, I was so proud of our town and the effort people made. Unfortunately, we're always in the news for negative reasons and sad events, but we've the most amazing community of people, and hopefully other people saw that on Friday. Thanks for reading this. Jennifer, fair play to you. Just your latest challenge. I wonder what's next for you. Brilliant achievement. For a great cause as well. And I do take your point, but we do try and talk. We were up in Carn recently and we've been in different parts of Inishowen celebrating all that's wonderful and beautiful and the people in particular, Jennifer. But I do take your point in terms of headline news. Often it's stories that don't seem really that positive. Well done to you and all involved. In relation to Gaza, two comments before a break, and then Brendan Devaney's going to join us. Re-Gaza doctor, he said, Hamas defending Palestinian people. I don't believe that Hamas are destroying their people. And in many cases, I believe that Hamas are destroying their people and in many cases using them as human shields and taking food and resources away from the impoverished. Remember, recently when thousands of Palestinians marched in protest against Hamas, which wasn't given much publicity by the media. One more on that. The man Greg is speaking to at present is 100% right. Israel have been winning out the Palestinians since 1948 and the world has to wake up. The only way to stop it is if the US is forced to stop supplying the weapons. They won't be forced to do anything. They really won't. And someone else pointed out an irony that Donald Trump very clear to call out the South African leader about a genocide in South Africa, which is disputed whether or not a genocide of white farmers is happening, but is also endorsing financing and supplying weapons to Israel to conduct a what is, you cannot deny, a genocide in Gaza. But we live in that world now. We live in that world whereby someone can very, very clearly on day one accuse one country of genocide and saying you have to stop it, it's unbelievable. And on the other hand, in the same day, sign off on a contract to send more billions of euro worth of weapons to bomb those in Gaza. But that you can't even call the irony out as if it's you can win the argument on it because it just happens right in front of your face. Do you get where I'm coming from? You could ask Donald Trump that question and he would just bat it away. We don't live in a world where now you can reason, it seems. DL Debate on tonight just after 7. Brendan Devaney is its host, compere, producer, everything really. Good morning to you. Thanks, Brendan.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, let's go back to Saturday. It seems like a lifetime ago. Saturday evening, McCool Park, 7 p.m, crappy conditions. Tyrone beat Donegal. Is that the post-Ulster hangover and maybe the kick up the jacksie that we're not indestructible that we needed?
Oh, listen, a very hard game to call. You know, I don't think there's a hangover because probably our best game last year was the exact same game where we blew Tyrone away. We maybe had a bit of dip after that, actually. So maybe it's a bit of a reset. But really, Greg, listen, we could have very easily won the match. And there was never going to be much in it between us and Tyrone, as it wasn't been between Tyrone and Armagh. I mean, Tyrone had Armagh beaten. So, you know, this was always going to come down to the wire. And particularly then, I think, just in those closing moments, we just struggled to get our kick out of the way and Tyrone seized a bit of momentum. I mean, I was saying just in commentary with Oisin, I thought we'd won it through two pointers because I couldn't see Tyrone getting any, but I didn't calculate Peter Hart, who is brilliant at what he does in that, and the bit of movement that led to it. Maybe we should have highlighted it was him on the ball. I think he's the only Tyrone player who could have kicked that two pointer. It was an unreal kick and that probably was the defining score of the game, but maybe a bit unlucky with the goals. I mean, the wet ball coming down for the first one in particular, I mean, just kind of slipped out of Keelan's grasp and that. So
they
that
took the chances. But, you know, obviously we speculate and we don't manage our expectations because that's what we can do with sport. It's brilliant. So, you know, we were wondering with Galway and Kerry and Armagh and what have you, if Donegal were the standout team, you know, they were the form team. As it turns out, there was a wee bit of a surprise there in Tyrone beating them. But no, I don't think Tyrone fans then are going away saying, right now, we're one of the top four, if you know what I mean. So Was it a bad game? Did Tyrone play out of the skin, or did Donegal not turn up?
Yeah. What Tyrone fans are we talking about? Because
really,
there wasn't many there.
Oh, right, okay.
I don't know what's happening with Tyrone at the minute. It's an absolute football factor. I mean, just seeing like their 20s and minors at the weekend again, you know, and they just seem to just keep producing players. But I don't know what's happening to the support. You know, it's really strange. I mean, I would say maybe would they hit 1,500 out of
that? Really, that bad?
Yeah. Oh, listen, it was. I don't know what's happening with them. So yeah, I just still think that there's six or seven teams out there, really, maybe six, and you would say there's nothing between them. They can beat each other on any given day, and I think that's what it comes down to. And I don't think for Donegal, I suppose what we thought was because of Jim and the mindset of the team, and every game we've done this year, we've wanted to win, we've won it. We've only lost a couple of games that we didn't really care about. So you just thought that home record.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Tyrone was one of the last teams to beat us there as well. So it didn't bother, it wouldn't faze them coming in to Balfour. They had a great squad. And probably as the game went on, losing, listen, Big Hughie went off, obviously Keenan McGonigal went off injured, like Jason McGee didn't make it. And then suddenly you're missing a lot of height round the middle. Like Langan, who was, what a performance. He was unbelievable. I mean, just a Rolls Royce of a player. But he isn't really a high fielder as such. So everything then was kind of been targeted, Michael. And, you know, Michael and Tyrone knew that, and they really kind of went after him second half. So all of a sudden we were looking, how are we getting out? And as I say, the big thing in that is Jason McGee. I mean, last season when we needed to get a kick out anywhere, he plucked it out of the skies. So getting him back is key to us, Greg, if we want to go on in a tight game and win it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, everything for a period seemed to just go through Michael Murphy. You wouldn't have been on that team last year.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, he was awesome again.
He was fantastic, but it was sort of route one through him.
Yeah, well, himself and
is that his positioning? Is that the game plan? Is that where we stuck? And it was right, give it to Murphy. He'll do something with the ball.
See, the guy Hamsey was on him, and then Teig as well. I mean, they're tough guys themselves. Like, you know, maybe just expecting so much of Michael. And plus, when they know that they can just break or knock it away from him, you know, it's just a lot to ask of him. And he still is, as you say, some of his kicks were just unbelievable.
Is that you? Is that a laptop or something?
I'm double jobbing here, Greg. Okay, don't tell me.
Listen, I won't hold you up. All right, so listen, we don't know where we're at now. We play Mayo next. It kind of, especially with Mayo losing, the one team doesn't advance from our group, right? So will one win do us? We can't.
It can potentially, but
it depends on score difference. Then you know, so
listen,
it's
Tyrone are in the driving seat now. Let's be honest.
But we're not, like, we can't take anything for granted. We don't want to be that fourth team.
Yeah. Well, we won't be. You know, let's be honest.
Where do we get the points?
We will beat Cavan and we'll beat Mayo as well.
I've never seen you actually speak with such certainty.
No, listen, I've watched the two of them.
Right, no, normally you hedge your bets, but you'll just go, we're going to beat them.
No, we will beat the two of them. I have no doubt in that. Listen, they're not bad sides, but they're not tactically aware as we are. And listen, for where we were the last couple of seasons, where those teams are, you know, it's a matter of us just finding. If we find our form and our rhythm, we will beat the two of them, but you will still face that preliminary game where you'll play a third team from another group as well. So, you know, quite a few things happened probably doing, you know, we had such a high percentage conversion rate in previous games, which left us a lot of unforced errors, which we've never seen. And a few of them, Greg, we actually just literally dropped the ball, which we don't normally do. Now, I know it's conditions and different things, but
that affected the all 30 players.
Yeah, Tyrone didn't do it as much. It was one of those kind of unusual things. And as well as that, I mean, Langan and Murphy hitting 15 points over 20, that's very unusual for us. We normally have a big spread of scoring.
Mm-hmm. But that's what I'm saying. I hope that when the chips are down, we don't just give it to Murphy.
Yeah, let's not hope. And I don't think Michael would want that either.
A caller says, the defeat has been coming for Donegal. Our defence has been shaky all year. We lost big leads twice in the Armagh game and we're lucky enough to win it. Too many players underperforming. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, I mean, last year Armagh had leads against us and we pegged them back as well. I don't think in the modern game now big leads are what they were.
I think it's what happens next, isn't it? It's when you start getting pinned back.
Yeah.
Do you what you do next? And I actually think it's encouraging that we can regroup and come back.
We were five behind twice against Tyrone at the weekend, which is a bit of a lead, but twice we pegged them back. And when McBurney had that brilliant two-pointer, you really thought, you know, at home, the crowd and all that, it was with us. But back again to kickouts, so many games have been decided on the kickouts. And I think it was our last five kickouts, Tyrone won them all and just penned us in. And when that happens, you're going to lose the match. Mm. So therein lies the whole key to this. And you're on about Gavin Mayo, tactics, whatever. If we get our kickouts, we can get our kickouts sorted, then there's no doubt we'll win them. That's the only thing you can see ever kind of swaying against you. So again, listen, Mulroney did well when they come in there. It's a difficult thing to come into that. Mm-hmm. And it's so difficult now to get kickouts away. We just happen to have Sean Patton, who's the best in Ireland at it. So it's always going to be difficult to replace that. And he did well up until those closing moments. And then how much of that is down to him and about the movement of the team as well? People were tired.
A lot of variables. Derry Galway also were Derry Armagh were also in action at 5 o'clock. That game wasn't televised at all.
Yeah, everybody giving off about this one. With all the technology we have, like, for streaming.
Shocking,
and you go onto the site there and you have all these multiples. I don't know why they need all these channels.
I know. Did you ever see, what it makes you think there is going to be like for? 8 games. I don't understand.
Is there suddenly going to be 10 matches on at one time?
They showed the Monaghan game instead. And, yeah. I mean, but don't do all the preamble and the half-time and the full-time. Just show the blooming game.
Yeah,
you've got commentators there anyway because you're going to show highlights later.
That's it.
A bit frustrating, all right. A lot of club action at the weekend too.
Yeah, listen, some good derbies in there, like the Termon and Downing's as well. And I suppose it's that time of year where the clubs are just kind of getting themselves together for championship. I mean, it's such a pre-competition, you know, the league. It's everybody just getting ready. So many players have county men as well, not involved. So they're just trying to get people up to the level and then get us ready for the big championship. So how much we read in there, it's hard to know. Listen, no more than kind of the league at county level. You've teams that want to be up in Division 1 and 2 and stay there to build. But the bigger teams that are set for the championship, particularly you look at like the Unions, Neve Connell, Gidor, even Four Masters now are making a play up there. You know, you look at a lot of the bigger sides up there that they aren't that worried.
You're strategising, you're building towards the championship.
It's a very slow build. I mean, Unions, for example, have no game for 3 weeks now, how it's fallen. Mm. So that's a strange time then for you just to keep players kind of ticking over. And you've got that balance between base fitness and then keeping your sharpness but keeping everybody fresh, which is a juggling act.
Back to the inter-county game, Owen Mulligan's on, Brenda Kilcoyne's on as well, so that'll be good. Tyrone and Donegal represented there. You'll have to be impartial, of course. You have Michael McMullen's on the show as well. I know the audience enjoy him talking more about the All-Ireland series across the country. Anything else coming up? That's not enough. That's plenty.
We'll wrap it all up, and we'll look ahead. Of course, the boys have to dust themselves down, as you said, Breffni Park, and That's the tester now, Greg, but I think we'll come out on top.
Well, you think? You were very certain a wee while ago. A lot of people talking about McCool's being the county ground. I mean, like, listen, you know, McCool's are a club. They're just a club, right? And they have to function like a club. I know they have the county ground. They've got the new score system. And I think if the sun was shining, no one would really be too worried about the lack of seating or you know, roof. Do you think it does need a cash injection from maybe outside the club to bring it up or what?
Yeah, listen, we'd love to see it covered all over. You know, as you said there, if it was a summer's evening, they wouldn't be worried about it.
It'd be glory, smothering themselves in oil.
Yeah, listen, I mean, you can obviously cover the stand area, you know, with, it just depends on cost. Can the GA come in? And obviously it's the county ground, so it needs backed up by everybody in there. But yeah, when it opened up before the match, you really did feel for people because, you know, we've been so used to the dry, and of course maybe not that many people are ready
for forget about football in the rain.
I know, my wee niece actually was texting, can I go up to Brendan?
I was a clever wee niece,
wee slow and mulligan. So I was like, here, I was saying to Arlene, if I had known, I would have taken her in. You better have to stay out for us, but I would have taken her in somewhere out the rain.
Yeah, and then there's little things that need to be gotten right, toilet roll and stuff for the toilets. But anyway, listen, I'm sure everyone will take on the criticism in how it's intended. People feel a sense of ownership because it is the county ground. It's not a criticism of individuals. It's a tough old thing for clubs to keep everything right. Okay, so you're on live after 7, and then it's a podcast then very shortly thereafter on the website.
That's the one, Greg.
Brent, thanks so much for calling up. My next guest on the show is Mairead Jennings, who's Director of Knock Youth Ministry. Good morning, Mairead.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me on.
It's great to have you on the show. What is the Knock Youth Ministry? I think I can work it out, but I want it in your words.
Knock Youth, well, we're based here at Knock Shrine in County Mayo. And Knock Youth Ministry, I suppose our role, our mission is all about bringing young people to Knock, giving them a positive experience of Knock, and hopefully giving them an opportunity to connect or perhaps reconnect with their faith wherever they may be on that journey.
And there is a Dare to Hope conference for young people aged 18 to 30. It's to explore their faith. But I like the word hope there because, you know, I don't really mind where people get hope, but things can seem quite desperate at the moment. And you know, even if you're, you know, comfortable in your own mind sometimes, you know, you might be uncomfortable because you lack hope or you feel disenfranchised or whatever it might be. So is this a way of maybe... getting people in that age category to embrace their faith and you know, seek hope through it.
Absolutely. As you said, hope is so important and sometimes it can be hard to find. We're just exposed to so much and we know that there is so much going on, not only perhaps in someone's own personal life, but also in our own country and further abroad again. And hope is incredibly important. It's just that light at the end of a tunnel, that guiding force. And for me, that so much comes from my faith, knowing that I'm not alone and being able to lean on that faith, but also having an opportunity to have people within my faith community to speak to and to share that with. And I think that's part of what this day will offer is, yes, to explore that hope and to inspire us all in ways to really grow that within ourselves and help us bring that to other people in our communities, in our families, in our lives. So the day is all about hope, and it's about embracing that hope, but it's also about being together with other people who perhaps feel the same as you, who are looking to either explore their faith a little bit more or perhaps are already feeling very strong in their faith and are hoping to inspire other people who attend. So hopefully it'll be a very joyful day. Yes, the theme is hope, and we do want to respect the fact that so many people are struggling with that right now, but the intention is to spread the hope and to bring that joy through this day.
Yeah, I think we aren't as resilient as we were once because we're raised a little bit differently. You know, we're wrapped in cotton bud, we're protected at every turn, we always have to have our phones on, and everything is done for us. I know that sounds like a generalization, but I mean, generally comparing a generation of 18-year-olds to my generation of 18, and also in the absence of that is the absence often of resilience. So we are more exposed, our feelings and our emotions are more exposed, I think. Are you catching up now? So say, for instance, again, going back 30 years, you probably would be building on someone's faith that's been driven into them. But now it seems that, you know, there's a big drive to get religion out of schools. Your communion, your confirmation are days out, really, effectively. And it's about how quickly you can get out of church and onto the bouncy castle, right? And how much cash you might get. And that's fine. I'm not being critical because I know exactly what it's like in my own house. So I just wonder, you know, what sort of quality of faith 18 to 30 year olds have now because of their exposure to it, right?
Yes, absolutely. I think perhaps I'm in a very lucky position because I do get to meet with people and engage with not only young adults, but also teenagers. We do a huge amount of work here in Knock Youth Ministry with teenagers. I actually perhaps am not, I have a lot of hope, maybe because I engage and see them. The conversations that young people are having, the questions that they're asking, they're healthy. They're good questions. I actually think it's a healthier way to approach faith, is to be more aware of what you're actually engaging in, what you're being asked to believe in, or what you're being encouraged perhaps to believe in. When we sit down, we have loads of different groups, loads of different opportunities like this day to chat with young people, young adults. And faith is flowing from them. It does look different than what it looked like 30 years ago, but it's there, it's within them. And the curiosity is so huge. And I think in terms of those of us perhaps working in youth ministry or working in faith fields of any kind or volunteering perhaps or working behind the scenes in a parish with a parish council, it's creating safe spaces and creating opportunities for young people to come together to ask their questions, not to have any expectation on them, not to expect them to know or believe something, but just to create that opportunity for questions. And when we can do that, it's something we experience here in Knock. These conversations are so filled with spirit. They're they're very energizing conversations and they're fantastic. So I suppose I get to see the hopeful side of faith in Ireland.
But do you find young ones sort of might say to you, you know, like, I want to develop my faith, I want to have my faith, but does that mean I can't go out and stuff? Like, do people, do young people differentiate, or do they feel that you know, having a strong faith, you know, there's other expectations of them in how they live their lives?
I'm not sure. I don't think so, to be honest with you. The young people we know, let's say those young people who perhaps journey with us for more of a long-term period that we actually get to see kind of grow and develop into young adults, they're doing exactly what every other young person is doing. They're going out, they're having fun, they're in school, they're in different clubs.
And what about sort of people at the start of that journey? Not, I mean, obviously they're you know, they're mature people to understand, but I'm on about people at the beginning of their journey. Do you know what I mean? But anyway, you answered that question.
Is it that they might feel that they can't do those things?
Exactly. Like they feel like that you know, having a faith and you know, living your best life, you know, the two can't coexist. So how did you've had similar events to this already, haven't you? Like what's the turnout like? Not necessarily in terms of numbers, but you draw people from all over the country. Do they come on buses? Are they dropped off by their parents? Like, what's the demo?
Yeah. So for us, in terms of young adult ministry, so this particular gathering is for 18 to 30 year olds, and we haven't here in Knock had a specific gathering for that age group in a while. But we would have large gatherings throughout the whole year with students from around the country. So for example, on May the 9th this year, we had the Live Life Youth Retreat, which is in memory of Donal Walsh. And we had 2,500 young people. We had 50, 60 buses pull into the car park. And again, that dynamic.
That's huge. Numbers.
You have a little bit of everyone. You have to approach the day with just an open mind and being open to whoever is sitting in front of you. And the energy that is here on the shrine, at the shrine on days like that, where these young people who are sitting in front of you realize that you're not trying to tell them to think a certain way or believe a certain way, but that indeed you're just maybe offering them inspiration or perhaps a little bit of hope in their lives, that they're not alone. If they feel like, do you know what, actually I do go to Mass, take exams coming up. A young person might come to our exam Mass here feeling like they're the only one, and all of a sudden they're one of 500 other young people standing around praying. So it's cherishing those moments and allowing young people to feel like this is a space for them, and that they're not alone. If they feel like, actually I do want to go to Mass, or I do want to light a candle, I would like to say a prayer, that there are so many other young people out there like that. And what we're really striving to do with this event is make sure those people have a place to come meet each other, gather, you know, see that they're not alone, see that there are so many others just like them who are curious and who are wanting to dive in and explore a bit more about their faith.
All right, when is the event and how do people reserve their place online? Because you need to have an idea of numbers, of course.
Yes, absolutely. So the event is on June the 14th, which is a Saturday. It's being hosted at Knock Youth Village, but all of the information and the fastest and most, I suppose, direct way to book is to log on to www.catholicbishops.ie, and on their homepage there is a click here button and it'll bring you to an Eventbrite page. But all the details, we have workshops, panel discussions, key speakers, all of the program for the day and details is up there. So if anyone's looking for more information, that's where I would recommend them to go.
And it's a one day, that one Saturday, and everything's packed into that. Okay.
It's a one day and lots packed into that day, but hopefully a very good day.
All right. Listen, thank you very much indeed. That's Marie Jennings, Director of Knock Youth Ministry. That event for 18 to 13 year olds, Dare to Hope. People get an anchor in their life in different ways. It could be from mindfulness, out walking. It could be your faith, and maybe that will maybe if you're listening yourself, great. If you think that might suit someone, pass it on and let them know about it. Hi Greg, I used to hunt with the Donegal Harriers. I never seen them coming home with a fox. It's not about fox hunting, it's about horse enthusiasts, young and not so young, having a good day jumping, having a wee dram and having the crack and chat and a bite to eat and a bit of slagging of who fell off, biting the dust. Yeah, but do you have to chase a fox around to do that, really? Could you not do that in a different way? You can still have that community and love your horses and all that kind of stuff and have the bants. But anyway, it's not something I've ever partaken in, and this sounds terrible. It's not something keeps me up at night either. So, you know, I'm kind of in that grey area. That's why your views are so important. I was reluctant to do Revolut. I downloaded it for my daughter. I've gotten scammed twice in the space of 3 weeks. I just want others to be aware of scams. One transaction in China and one in Germany. I wonder what's going on there. Because really, with the young, if they're young people, you kind of have to approve their purchase. I just wonder, are they on Temu and Shein sites? A lot of young people want the Revolut so they can go on the likes of Temu and Shein, and they might not be going to the right sites and stuff. I could be wrong, but that kind of, I suspect that that might be what's happening there, because they, whomever is scamming you, can't have imagined your details. They will have to have been inputted somewhere. So I just wonder if the young person, if they are very young, might be trying to, you know, buy their hole or whatever it might be. Hi, I've reported a tree that fell over in the storm to the council months ago. I reported it three times, and last night I had to go remove a branch at 12 because one of the branches blew out onto the road at Kilross. Only a matter of time before it causes a collision. The council are really good in that kind of stuff. I'm really surprised that you've had to sort of... I'm really surprised that you've had to call three times and nothing's happened. Right, can we please refrain from blaming politicians to find out who's to blame for our issues? We need to look closer to home. Let's look at those who vote. Also, our relations, friends and neighbours who continually vote for the same political parties that have been in power across this state for 100 years. You see, it's easy to blame others. Well, let me blame a group of people. Those that don't vote. If those that don't vote came out and voted, they swing the election whichever way. Turn it on its head. But unfortunately, 4 out of 10 people don't. And maybe they're the most vocal about, we keep voting the same, we keep voting the same. If you want change, you know, you can't, if you've got hardcore 20% Fianna Fáil voters, 20% Fine Gael voters and 20% Sinn Féin voters in this county, for an example, let's say that's the figures, they're all going to vote with their local party and the politician. That's the way it is. It's party politics. And then there's a certain amount will vote independent. And then there's a ton of people that do not vote at all. You know, they're the ones that break the mould. If a mould is to be broken, maybe they might all come out and vote Sinn Féin or Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael, I don't know. But it's not, I wouldn't blame those that vote. I'd blame those that don't vote. But I'm not even blaming them, because in a way, not voting is a vote, right? But those that don't vote have a big say. Fox hunting is debatable sport. Majority of foxes killed at night by drive-by hunters with powerful searchlights and infrared fitted rifles. I've recovered 5 foxes this year killed from shooting on my land adjacent to a roadway. Well, they're shooting them for sport in inverted commas. Last one on sport before the break. McCool's deserves more seating. For sure it's our county pitch. The pitch hasn't been renovated in a while and the GEA should look about more works. Also wishing the boys the best luck against Cavan. We're all entitled to an off day. Indeed. Most of those players, if not all of those players, owe us very little in terms of giving up to the county. Sometimes you forget they're not getting paid. But they get to that level of fitness, that level of elite sports persons, and it's for the love of their club and the love of their county. Should never be forgotten either. Lorraine McCafferty's with me on the show now. Hello, Lorraine. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing? Thanks very much for give me the opportunity to come on, Greg.
Not at all. Right, now you are chair of the Northwestern Development Partnership. So we're going to be talking about Donegal Town specifically. Is this an organisation that is about Donegal Town, or is it wider than that and the focus just is on Donegal Town at the moment?
I think how I describe it is the development to any infrastructural development would be planned for Donegal Town, but it would be to support Donegal Town and the broader surrounding areas. So, you know, but we would be looking to build, you know, we're concentrating on 3 things at the minute, but it would be centred within Donegal Town.
Yeah, because we were actually just having this conversation on Friday by coincidence. We were talking about, you know, there's a lot of housing going up in and around Donegal Town, and it's, you know, it's vibrant and it's buzzing, and, you know, more developments out there, Killybegs Road, Tesco not far away. So I'm not saying that side of it's sorted, but where the gaps are being identified is in services, you know, things to do, especially stuff that's not booze-based. Not that there's any harm in that, but you know what I mean? The cinema was just on the brink and then that was lost. Different things, a more diverse range of things to do.
Yeah, listen, I think nobody's going to deny that we're probably about 20 years behind similar sized towns, both in County Donegal and throughout Ireland, right? We haven't benefited from the investment that other towns have seen. And we are looking for other things to do other than, as you say, more on the you know, drinking side of things. So, you know, what we're looking to do is base any development in Donegal town on what the community wants, right? So, and we're going to do that through surveys. We've already did one for a sports and recreational hub. We reached out to 23 clubs, you know, that's a catchment area of about 4,000 members, to see what, if a sports facility was to be built in Donegal town, what would be included in those facilities. And we had, you know, we had great feedback, and based on that, you know, we've kind of moved forward to identifying potential sites, which we have. We spoke to the minister a couple of weeks ago, the Minister for Sport, and we lodged an application under the Donegal Town Local Area Development Plan.
And briefly, what might that look like? Because, you know, you've got four masters. Yeah. It's a good site. You've got facilities at the AVS. You've got, you know, your indoor soccer. You've got local soccer clubs. You've got the rugby club a wee bit out of town, right? So what were the people saying that the gaps that need filling there? Because from the outside looking in, some might say, well, that seems pretty well resourced. So what did the community come back with in terms of what's needed sports-wise?
I think the overwhelming response was that there just isn't enough pitches for training.
Yeah.
And that is the key
sort
one.
Sort of publicly, right? Owned as well, public access,
correct,
stuff. Yeah,
correct.
Okay.
And you also have, right, the girls' sports is obviously emerging as well. And when you try, when you have the pitches that we have or the facilities that we have, but you're trying to expand that all the time through more engagement, through the new population that's been added to the town, as well as trying to encourage, yeah, additional kids and girls doing, you know, more sports. The facilities just aren't there to kind of facilitate all of that.
All right, interesting. Right, this survey that's out for, is it out yet? Has it been launched yet? It is out, right. So this is for members of the Donegal community and its surrounds. So the focus of this survey, what are you putting to the people? And listen, everyone needs to get involved in these surveys and have their say on the future development of the town, because now's the time, not after the fact. So what are you asking people?
Yeah, this is the first one of many, and it's the same with the sports one. So we're going to reach out to the community at various points throughout all of this development, right? These developments are what we call medium to long-term developments. They're large in nature. But the arts, culture and entertainment survey is just basically 13 very quick questions as to what your relationship is to the town. You know, how you engage with arts, culture, and entertainment right now. Is it something that you do frequently or sort of like a once-off? And then what would you like to see when we think about arts, culture, and entertainment in the town? You know, we also ask a question whether or not we think the existing facilities is sufficient. And we're seeing just from the 600-odd people that have already responded that it's certainly not, right, overwhelmingly.
So, well, if you think you've got Sligo, you know, you've got Sligo's theatre and what have you, Ballyshannon, they've got their facilities. Then there's a jump to Ballybofey, Stranorlar, then on to Letterkenny, then on to Lifford. You know, really, our place space is the John Bosco, which is grand, right? But, I mean, yes, there aren't many other, so there's no, there aren't spaces that could match some of the towns I've talked of there.
Yeah, no, absolutely right. And we're obviously working hand-in-hand with the Bosco Committee as well.
And they're great. Don't get me wrong. They're, yes, great. Like,
yeah, but, you know. No. And they're very engaged. We're obviously, the results of the survey will drive a lot of what, you know, will be set out as what the town needs. So obviously when we get that information, that will form the basis then for conversations, you know, with the Bosco or with, you
or
know,
wherever, it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, right? Nothing set in stone. This is very much...
Because location and accessibility is part of it as well. And some people might say, let's get a site just on the outskirts of the town or what have you. So, but that's all in the mix. That's the views you want of people. What do you
Absolutely.
Want? Where do you want it? Who can we work with in delivering it? What kind of space do you want? And I mean, it seems like a pipe dream, but these projects start somewhere, and public consultation is a great starting point.
Yeah, and I think also the transparency, right? So we have a Facebook and an Instagram page. There's a website being built sort of like as we speak. And what we're going to use those sort of platforms for is making the community aware of what we're doing, what our focus areas are, where we are on a particular topic or project. And they can, you know, give us that feedback. But the surveys are going to be key. So it is really important. And for anybody who's listening out there that wants to go to our Facebook page or our Instagram, Northwestern Development Partnership, you'll scroll down, you'll see that the survey for the arts and culture is pinned at the top of our page. Click the link. It's 13 questions. It'll only take you probably less than 4 minutes to fill it out. And, you know, I think that's going to be vital for, you know, what we design down the line.
Lovely stuff. Thanks so very much, Lorraine. Keep us in the loop. We'll share that link as well, as people might find it easy to find that way as well. Take care, Lorraine. Thanks for that. Great stuff.
Fantastic.
Bye-bye. Lorraine McCafferty there, Chair of the Northwestern Development Project. Okay. We'll share that at some point on our socials as well. A caller says, I think when a private housing development is taking place, the developer should have to pay a levy that would go towards sports facilities and amenities, such as the cinema. I think that £500 per house would be a good amount. Yeah, it's not a bad idea, I suppose. I'm not sure what... Greg, what do you mean not voting is a vote? Because your democratic right to vote and choose is a vote. But also people might say, you know, I'm so dissatisfied with this system, I don't trust it and I'm not voting. And in a way, that is obviously a vote, if that makes sense. All right, chat to you tomorrow at 9. Have a great day.